Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This podcast is supported by Elite Sports Travel. Visit elitesportstravel.co.uk to view the various packages available to watch live NFL games in the US. Bookings are currently available for the Super Bowl in February and also the 2023 season in Las Vegas. Now let's get into the podcast.
This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Neil Reynolds Podcast, brought to you in association with Elite Sports Travel, joined by longtime friend now and colleague, Will Blackman, who is a Super Bowl champion, but as we've said on air recently, more importantly, Sky Sports NFL's fantasy football champion. Will, it's been a few years. I finally got you on my podcast. Mind you, it's only the first time I've asked you. It's not like you said no for ages.
I know. The first time you asked me to be on your podcast was last night, Neil. So
Yes, so I'm not gonna pretend like I've been hard done by. Absolutely,
finally, he joined the show.
Yeah, he's so hard work, such hard work. So this, Will, is a kind of really your life in football. And
oh wow, okay, how about that?
Yeah, so kind of a little bit of everything there with high school, college. Was football a big part of your life growing up? How young were you when you got into football?
Yeah, I mean, football was huge, man. It was we watched it in our house. We were an American football household. I remember since I was about 4 years old, I remember watching football games, and I became real fancy of Barry Sanders and his style just as a kid at that young age. So yeah, for me, football has been, as they say in Ted Lasso, football is life.
Well, yeah, because actually, sometimes players just play and they're in their bubble and they're just bothered about their era. But we've been together at live games at Tottenham, at Wembley. And when the alumni come in, you can see you get genuinely excited. You do respect the past, don't you, right? It's a part of it for you. It wasn't just you existing in your era as a player.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I consider myself somewhat of a historian when it comes to the sport. Part of me, not just watching live games, but my father had all the old school VHS films from NFL films. And I remember listening to John Facenda's voice. And I remember, The Autumn Wind is a Pirate. And also, Sam Spence, who knows the composer? I know the composer, Sam Spence.
I didn't know that. That's so, next level.
Yeah, so I was all in, watching that stuff, watching Football Follies. There was one in particular video, and I think you can find it on YouTube. It's called The Hidden NFL. And it was one of the first produced films about players and coaches mic'd up. And it was about a 2-hour film. And I just thought it was the coolest thing. So you're absolutely right. I remember when I was here last time, we saw Eric Dickerson, and I was super excited to hang out with him. And during the Super Bowl this year, I had a Super Bowl party in Los Angeles. And I remember I turned around and Warren Moon showed up. And I'm like, losing my mind. So to your point, yeah, I am super obsessed with the guys from the past. I obviously love my era, and I am super excited about the future.
Yeah, the future is very exciting as well. So college football for you, Boston College. Start that relationship where you're still rooting for Matt Ryan even now, right?
Of course. Yeah, I love Matt. Matt.
How was Boston College for you?
BC was great. It was. It's funny because even going back to just when I was younger, I had a conversation with a friend last night, and I told him I thought the NFL was impossible. Really, I never. I thought it'd be cool to do it one day, but one, I didn't know how. And two, I literally thought it was impossible. Now, that doesn't mean that I gave up trying. I honestly didn't try. It was just more so I just love playing the sport. So anytime it was an opportunity to face like a competition of somebody better, I got excited for that situation. And fortunately, it benefited me because every time I did well against stronger competition, I got promoted, you know, to a certain level. So then once I got to high school, I remember my brother was already a student at Boston College, and his roommate was a graduate assistant. And a graduate assistant at a college is someone who they're a student at the school, but they're almost like they do the dirty work for the colleges. I don't know, like laundry or get the players sorted, what have you. And he asked my brother, he said, I heard your brother's pretty good. And my brother Leon said, no, my little brother's really good. At the time, I'm only 13 years old, you know, he's already talking me up. So he said, well, your brother should come to this football camp. Boston College has a football camp and he should come to this. So he sent me the pamphlet. I sent it to my father, and it was a lot of money because it's an overnight camp and you had to bring your own equipment. So my dad saved up a bunch of money so I can go to this camp. So I go to this camp and I just had so much fun. And I remember every time I made a play, the head coach would always say something like snarky to me. Like he would talk so much trash. And I'm like, who is this guy talking trash to me? And at the end of the camp, you know, they would grab pretty much all the best kids and they would have a competition with them. And me, I was only 13. So they put me to the side with the other kids, but they had a competition. But then one coach, he said, hey, we should throw Will in there. He had a good day. And so they said, black men. And I got up and I was like, all right, I'll go in there. And I ended up coming out unscathed, right? So fast forward, this is the summertime. Fast forward to my sophomore year. I'm still 13, turning 14. And I remember I got a letter saying, thank you for coming to the Boston College camp, you know, da da da. We're going to offer you a full scholarship. So,
oh, dude, 13.
Yeah. Wow. Turning 14. Wow. Exactly, 14 years old. So I lost my mind. So that kind of, that set the tone right there. That's where it became very real for me. Like, okay, this is the pathway to actually play college football. So going through the whole recruiting thing, it was a absolute blur, man. I end up being, you know, All American. I was ranked number 6 in my position. I was a running back, believe it or not. And then over 40 offers, and then eventually end up picking Boston College over Notre Dame and Wisconsin. So, yeah, it was close to home, but also far enough I could be by myself.
I'm sure it's a problem.
I gave you a lot just now.
No, it's good. Hey, this is a very free-flowing conversation. This is what this is all about. I know it's not good when people get no offers or one offer, mm-hmm. or but there must be and this is going to sound like you're a bit spoiled if you complain about it, but 40 offers is a lot for a young person to handle as well. That must have been overwhelming. That's almost a problem in itself to have that many offers.
It was, but you kind of, there's like a hierarchy, I guess, you know.
It's an instant dismissal of some, right?
Kind of, yeah. I don't use that word.
I know what you mean. An editing of it, maybe.
But it's like, hey, you know, at the time, you know, Arizona was okay. University of Arizona was okay school. But then I got an offer from Notre Dame.
Okay? Right.
So then you kind of put Notre Dame in this corner and you put Arizona over here, you know. So, yeah, it became like, hey, there's an upper echelon of teams where other people just throw their hat in because, like, hey, you never know. Let me just offer the kid and see what happens. You never know. So, yeah, it was fun. It was overwhelming, but I handled it pretty good. As witty as I am now, I was the same as a teenager.
It's sharp as a tack. You were good. You would be all right with it. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I go back. I'll try to find one, but I read one of my old articles, and I couldn't believe like some of the stuff I said. I sound like an old man. It was super funny.
But. Wisdom. That's it. You had it then. You got it now. Fourth round pick of the Packers. What was the draft experience like for you?
The draft experience was stressful because going into my senior year, I was ranked as a top cornerback. And at the time, we lost everyone on offense. And Coach Tom O'Brien asked me to go play receiver. And I immediately told him, heck no, like this is not happening. We had several conversations about me going receiver, and I kept telling him I won't do it. And then eventually I looked at the bigger picture, Neil. I said, okay, I'm probably going to get drafted. Like I was pretty sure that I was going to get drafted going into my senior year. I know a lot of kids on my team that weren't, so they really pride themselves on going to a bowl game. You know, that was like a big deal for them.
Right.
So I said, I'll try receiver in spring football and spring training. And then I did try it, and I ended up winning the X job. And as you know, Neil, the X receiver is the guy. That is Randy Moss. That is Jerry Rice. That is the guy. And I still made a deal where I can play a little bit of defense on third down. But I ended up being the starting receiver my senior year. And so the reason why I'm mentioning this story is because I did everything pretty well. I was a good defensive back. I was a good receiver. I was a good returner. But in order to be drafted high, you need to master one of those. And I think for me, because I was a jack of all trades, it was like, you know, we don't want to invest because we're not sure. So for me, that was tough. So I remember I played cornerback my first 2 years, and I played receiver my senior year. And then I go to the Senior Bowl as a cornerback, and then I go to the combine as a receiver. So it was so it was all over the place.
You know, whether to run backwards or forwards.
Exactly. I know, right? So I could defend myself. Yeah. So I remember going to the combine, and I spoke to the Atlanta Falcons. They just grabbed me in the hallway. That's what it is, the combine. They just grab you in the hallway and want to talk to you because they don't have a scheduled meeting. They said, hey, we really like you at receiver, and we're probably going to get you, you know, probably maybe as an undrafted receiver if you're there. And I, you know, this is where a little bit ego comes into play. I was like, I'm getting drafted. I don't know what this guy's talking about. And so right then and there, I told the whole building, I was like, I'm not playing receiver. I want to play defensive back. If Atlanta thinks that I'm not going to get drafted as a receiver, then I don't want to play receiver. So that was it for me. And then, the draft came, and it's not so much about, it is a big deal about where you get drafted, right? It's a huge, in terms of financially, it's a big deal. But what makes it worse is when you see guys that you competed against that you've won go before you.
That's the hard list in your head.
Yeah,
right?
That's the hard part. Yeah, that is right. The difficult part. You're like, no way, you know. But hey, I got it, and I will say this: the fact that I was very versatile, that allowed me to play 12 years. That was a big deal.
We see the helmets of the teams you played for behind you. If you're listening, there's a Green Bay Packers helmet, a Giants, a Jags, and the Washington Football Team. So, being a Green Bay Packer, what was that like? I mean, I've been there to Lambeau Field as a spectator. I've been to Packers training camp now. It was one of the last ones on my list this summer to tick off. It is a special place as an outsider and as a fan. What's it like to be a Green Bay Packer?
Yeah, well, we started off the pod talking about history. And I mean, it doesn't get bigger than that.
It doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. As a fan or a player, you feel it once you show up there. You're like, in this desolate town, like, you got this monumental place here. And it's everything that I thought it would be. It was really cool for me because going to Boston College, we weren't a big football school. We were known for hockey and academics. And also, too, when I was in school, the Red Sox won, the Patriots won, the Bruins won, the Celtics won. Like, everybody won when I was in school. So no one really, even though we were ranked in the country, no one really cared. So it was really cool to be there and to – you know, I'm there and Favre is there and Charles Woodson, we just signed him, and Donald Driver. You see all these guys that you watched growing up. So just to be there and the fans, it's how they embrace the city. There is nothing like it. There is absolutely nothing like it. And it's probably one of the coolest experiences, not just for like playing football, but just like in life. It was pretty cool.
I'm hoping I've got the date right. If I said December the 10th, 2007, what would we be talking about for you? A couple of touchdowns?
Yeah, did you Lambeau leave? You don't let me answer the question.
Sorry, I want to make sure I got it right. I was so worried I got the date wrong. I didn't back myself there. I should have done. I got the date.
I don't remember the actual date, but I do remember I broke my foot in the beginning of the year, and the late GM Ted Thompson said, we're not going to put on injury reserve because it's not a complete break, but we'll hold him out for a little bit. And I remember that was my first or second game back after resting for 2 months. And I just that day, I don't know. I just felt it, you know, it was like 18 degrees and I just felt really good that day. And I remember I kept catching up a couple of returns that I almost scored. And I was like, oh man, I mean, Vernon Morency from a running back from Oklahoma State. He looked at me, he was like, yo, you might break one today. I was like, I might. And so the one I caught, I caught it in traffic like an idiot, but I ended up making it, scoring the other one. I just ended up you know, attacking a play, and sometimes you're in the right place at the right time, and I jumped on the ball in the end zone. So that was a fun day. That day, I feel like that day definitely bought me another 3 years in Green Bay, because I had so many injuries, and sometimes when you have that, teams don't wait for you.
So really, one day can buy you a chunk of time in the NFL.
Yeah,
one big game where you have a return touchdown and a fumble recovery touchdown.
Seriously, because I was there obviously to play nickel, but also as a return specialist. And, you know, I haven't really been doing much. I had a good preseason, but then to come in out in one game and boom, two touchdowns. Okay. You know, they're like, all right, this is what we were waiting for.
So I know obviously with you're now in the media, you're on that side of the fence, but I know when you talk on, you talk in the media and you talk about when you were in locker rooms, and you said it this week about the Giants, you would handle stuff in your locker room together. So I'm gonna phrase this carefully and then let you can answer however you wish to answer. You were there at the end of Brett Favre and the beginning of Aaron Rodgers. Much was made about that period of time and whether the pair clashed and Rodgers eventually took over as Favre left. What can you tell me, and what do you feel comfortable telling me about what it was like at Green Bay at that time with them two?
Oh, I can tell you anything. I mean, this is a lot of it's well documented. It was kind of like, hey, we're ready to get Aaron Rodgers. All right, Favre, you did well. That's enough. The hard part that I can see for Favre is the fact that we just lost the NFC Championship game. Like, we just went, we just had an incredible season. I think the thing for us, it was, they really kept it out of the locker room. It was really with management and what was going on upstairs. But I mean, in our case, we were like, look, I mean, whoever's under center, we're going to be fine, you know?
Right. Like, yeah.
Go ahead.
So players didn't necessarily, because sometimes you hear about, oh, well, there was a Favre camp and a Rodgers camp. But I mean, you were talking about two great quarterbacks. You already knew by then Rodgers was going to be the man.
Yeah, we knew he was going to be really good. This good? I don't know. But I knew he was going to be really good, you know. I mean, he's absolutely efficient, like how he is. He throws like 4 interceptions a year. But yeah, I mean, it like I said, we were going to be fine either way. However, I could see more so like on offense where maybe older receivers are close to what Favre, like Donald Driver and Favre had a good relationship, you know, and then, you know, maybe Greg Jennings and Aaron Rodgers had a better one. I don't know. Or maybe some linemen got along. So maybe amongst themselves, but overall, it didn't really affect the team, what we were trying to do. At the end of the day, they made the right decision and they ended up getting a title.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, everyone, and this is a public service announcement brought to you by Elite Sports Travel and me, producer Gary. So I'm just here interrupting Neil's conversation with Will Blackman there just to tell you all about a live show that we have coming up of the Neil Reynolds podcast. So we'll be live on the 28th of October, which is a Friday, at the Sports Bar and Grill in Marylebone. Neil will be there with some special guests from around the NFL. Now, not guests from around the NFL, but just generally speaking, guests from around the NFL, if that makes sense. So tickets are on sale now. They're £10 and they include a free drink upon arrival. If you want to know more about the event, then just head over to our social media on Twitter. Neil is Neil Reynolds NFL. We are at the NR podcast. And if you look at our pinned tweet, there's the link where you can buy your tickets, and it's got the other information, such as the start time, which is 7 p.m. As I say, tickets are £10. They include a free drink, and it would be an evening of fun and laughs and NFL talk ahead of the last London games of the season, which is the Jacksonville Jaguars entertaining the Denver Broncos. So that is the Neil Reynolds podcast live at the Sports Bar and Grill in Marylebone on the 28th of October, which is a Friday. Doors open at 7 p.m. So head over to Eventbrite if you want to buy your tickets direct from there, or head over to our social media. Again, we are at the NR podcast. Neil is at Neil Reynolds NFL, where you've got all the information and where you can get your tickets. So hopefully we get to see you there. If not, we'll see you next time. So, Neil, back to you and Will.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is seven-time Pro Bowler Cam Jordan, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
A couple of other things with the Packers. So you had a couple more kind of punt return touchdowns, kick return touchdowns. What's the key to a good to find the end zone on a return touchdown? What's the keys for a return man?
Yeah, it's funny. I've been returning punts since I was, you know, a teenager, and I never really knew like the main secret of a successful punt return. And it wasn't until 2008, my third year in the NFL, where I really found out like what is the key. And before, I would just catch the ball and I was so good with instincts. Like I see a different color, I go the other way, you know, just,
right.
I was good at playing those type of games. But I remember 2008, Aaron Rodgers' first start, Monday Night Football versus the Vikings. And also this is the first time my wife Shauna has ever seen me play football. She's never been to a game. She's never even watched me. So I'm thinking in my head, Neil, I'm like, I need to do something today.
I'm not fair catching anything.
I didn't fair catch a darn thing, Neil. It was crazy because Mike McCarthy was furious. Like, what's going on with him? Why isn't he fair catching anything? Literally, no, my girlfriend is sit there in the front row watching me.
Try explaining that to coach.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. And so I remember I kept getting terrible field position. And so I go to the sideline, and speaking of, you know, former players, there was Robert Brooks was on the sideline, former Packer receiver. And he said, hey, man, like you need to like just relax a little bit. Just relax. You know, just he said, when you catch the ball, obviously, that's number one for a successful return. Catch the football. OK, that's number one. Catch the football. He said, just get the first 10 yards.
Right.
That's it. He said, just get the first 10 yards. He goes, if you think about it, if you are averaging 10 or 11 yards a return, you're probably going to leave the NFL. He said, right. You really want to break it down. Now we get to analytics here, right? Now you will break it down. So I'm like, all right, get the first 10 yards. He said, yeah, and just see what happens. So I go out there and same thing. I don't fair catch it. I just boom, boom, and I get hit. And then I was like, all right, let me just try this. I get the punt. I get like a nice 10-yard gain, I believe it is. And so I'm like, all right. And I go to the sideline. Everyone's happy. I got some good field position. Okay, cool. Next return, I get like a pretty good line drive, and I catch it clean. I get the first 10 yards, and it's like all good. And I'm still running, Neil. And then I keep going. I'm going. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. I was like, I'm out of here. And so I end up breaking for a touchdown. And it was pretty cool because, like I said, it was Monday night. I just had a conversation with Robert Brooks, and I remember my teammates were trying to celebrate, and I ran all the way around the end zone to go find my girlfriend and give her the football.
McCarthy's like, now we know why he didn't.
That's why he's losing his mind. So that honestly is the key. If you can catch the ball and then instantly get vertical and get the first 10 yards, eventually you'll have more success.
I noticed that in the studio when we watch you because you get frustrated if they – because sometimes you'll say, we got action. So, you know, you can sense when it's a returnable punt. And then sometimes they'll go sideways. And not everyone's Dante Hall. Not everyone can do that and go side to side.
Yeah, speaking of, yeah, I know. He was just there. I used to watch this stuff before games, no question about it. So, I mean, you can set up by going – set it up a little bit and then get vertical. But, yeah, when I say we got action, it's because they have some room, you know, to get a return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your season with the New York Giants, 2011 – love to get into that. It must have been very interesting to go through because you got waived, right?
Yeah, so
waived in the season, and then you end the season with a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, so it was pretty interesting. So I had a really bad knee injury 2009 with Green Bay. Came back the next season with Green Bay in 2010, and I just never got healthy. Mm. And the tough part about that is, you know, I was there for the whole 4 years of building that team. And I always say it's, you know, when you become a head coach, it's a 4-year plan. You know, you have your team and you evaluate, and then you have your first draft, And then you go through free agency the third year, and the fourth year is like, let's do this. And we literally went through that whole entire progression. And I was like, this is the year. I remember McCarthy when he showed the blank roster, like, hey, let's fill up that roster, the championship board. And I just never got healthy that year, and I ended up getting released. I signed with the Giants in 2010, and just my knee just never healed. So I didn't get waived. I just didn't finish the season healthy.
Yep.
And so this is why, you know, you hear a lot of stories about, like, horror stories about medical groups and football teams and physicians and stuff like that. But I will say this about the Giants is when I signed with the Giants in 2010, usually when you have a pre-existing injury, they have you sign a waiver. And the waiver means they're not responsible if you get injured.
Right.
Okay. If you have a pre-existing injury. And so at the end of the season, I remember my wife was pregnant with our son Ryder, and Coach Coughlin let me go home to go be there for the birth because my knee wasn't healthy and I wasn't going to play anyway. So he let me go home, and then I came back, and then I met with the doctors, and they said, hey, we're going to rip up this waiver, and because you need to get this knee fixed. You really do. So they said, pick any surgeon, pick any physio facility, and we'll take care of it. And honestly, I wasn't part of the team anymore. I was released. And this is also during the lockout.
Wow.
So I sent them every bill from January all the way to about October. Every bill I sent, they took care of it. They took care of it. And fantastic. Then at the time, Jerry Reese, the general manager, he said, you know, he gave me his business card. He's like, hey, give me a call when you feel healthy. Almost like courtesy, right? You say it to just sound good.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to call you. Okay. Yeah. Just keep going. So sure enough, when I got healthy, I did give him a call. Cause I ended up having another surgery. I had two surgeries before 2011, I think it was. So I called him and he said, hey, not right now, but we'll see. So I remember eventually, a few months later, they had a bunch of injuries. He said, hey, we're going to bring guys in to work out. They brought me in. I had a good workout, and they ended up signing me in 2011. And it was tough because 2010, I got released. Green Bay won the Super Bowl. So that was like a bad year for me, dude.
Yeah.
And then come back 2011, we actually go through Green Bay in the playoffs, and I end up winning the Super Bowl with the Giants. So it was talking about, like, that's why I tell people, like, the emotions in pro sports is nuts. Just to give people a clear picture, 2010, I have a bad knee. I remember I signed a tender for like $1.5 million. So I had a bad knee. I lost out on $1 million. My wife is 6 months pregnant, and I am getting released.
Okay, so stop there for a sec. So this was the person who had over 40 scholarship offers. So you had that all kind of mapped out. You know, it wasn't easy, but you had plenty of options when you were going into college. I remember when you talked to me about George and you said some people travel first class to their journey and some go another way. So you were first class early on.
Yep.
How did you then deal with all of those little bits of the business of the NFL and the bumps that you deal with? Because you maybe didn't have to deal with those when you were younger.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Because even to get drafted and to figure things out. So I don't know. I just felt like I was just really resilient. I just knew if there was any kind of hope, even if it was like a small glimpse, like then I could go for it. You know, I think I was just wired different. I think a big part of it too, I lost my mother when I was young, when I was about 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And to deal with something like that as a child,
is
tough, you know, and I was still able to go out and, you know, live my life and still play football and perform. So I think that was a big deal. But yeah, it's rare, because that's why a lot of guys don't play long, because it's not even so much about their ability. It's just mentally they're not able to be as resilient, you know.
I love the way this all connects, because you talked about how you didn't want a fair catch in front of your then girlfriend.
Yeah.
But you won a Super Bowl with you fair catching the football to set up Eli Manning's drive to win the game, to beat the New England Patriots. every fiber in your body must have said, this is the Super Bowl. There's 3 minutes left. I'm running this one back. The discipline to be a pro in that moment and to say, well, no, this is a fair catch. This is the time when I should fair catch this. I'd love to know just that battle. Maybe there was no battle because you're a professional, but from there, it's just a fascinating situation that you didn't like fair catching as a returner and you did, and you won a Super Bowl.
Well, I was definitely no fool either, Neil. No. You know,
Tom Coughlin stood over there.
Yeah. Well, but even still, though, but you can still be a hero in fair catch the ball.
Right. You the most important thing there was to give Eli the football, right?
Exactly. And the funniest thing ever was, honestly, you know, you have to be all about self-positive talk. And literally this whole time I'm telling myself, better not drop this ball. You're going to be laughed at. You're going to be made a mockery of. You're going to look like a fool. I was telling all the stuff that you don't say before the ball caught the
ball.
Were
you? Were you thinking? Because yes. That's Super Bowl history. You would be replayed for years to come if you dropped that football.
Absolutely. No question. Especially, we just played San Francisco the week before, and that dude had a horrible day. Oh, I mean, man, oh, man. You know, that was a close game, right?
So that's,
you know,
that's in your mind as you're jogging onto the field in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I knew they're going to hang it up in the air. Mm. I knew they were going to hang it up in the air. Hopefully, you know, and it's a left-footed punter, so maybe distract me somehow. And it's a big situation. One thing is, because I love football, understood it, I knew situational ball. Mm. So that wasn't like a problem. So I knew, hey, let me just get the fair catch it, regardless where it is, get to the spot, catch it. And then, you know, let the offense do their thing.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, I was in the end zone that day for Sky Sports. I still think the Eli pass to Mario Manningham was one of the greatest passes I've ever seen. Because I was in the end zone, he had like 6 inches to drop that down that left sideline. It was spectacular.
Dude, that was absolutely insane. I mean, just everything down to a science, like, had to be perfect. Mm. Like the football location, the how he caught it, you know. They always say, you want to turn your hands. He had to turn his hands inside to catch the ball. And he, you know, tightrope walked the sideline, and he was getting hit, and he held onto the ball. And the best part, too, is the whole soundbite, make him go to Manningham. Don't make them go to Cruz or Knicks. Make him go to Manningham. They went to Manningham, and it was like, it's crazy, absolutely crazy.
What was it like being under the confetti?
It was cool because it was, you know, I remember just – Like I told you before, I watched everything. I never missed a Super Bowl. I never missed a Super Bowl. Watching it since I've been born, and I remember just watching it with my father, and to actually be on the field, like, this is crazy. We went from watching it to now we're down here. My brother was there too, and it was like a movie, literally like a movie. It's funny. I still have my cleats, and my cleats have some confetti underneath it, so I put them like they're up there. So
fantastic, yeah, all on that backdrop. You must have, like, really, obviously you played for Jacksonville and Washington, but you also went to the CFL. Did you just feel like you weren't done with football? Was that passion, is that what drove you to Canada late in your career?
Yeah, I mean, that's why the most anxiety I ever had was to go to another country and play football. I feel like for me, I think because I was out for a little bit, that I felt like the best way for me to show that I'm still capable is to actually play football. If I can go to Canada and get some good film of me actually playing football, then I thought that would help me, because I'll go to any workout, Neil, and I will smash the workout. Like, I'm the wrong guy to bring in a workout, because I'm gonna do well. Like, I'll be super, I'll be arrogant about that. I know that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just wanted to show, like, I could still play football. So that's what I did. That I did one game. I mean, that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, that'd be part two
about my experience up there. It's interesting, but at the end of the day, there's some really good football up there. I was really impressed with the players and the whole dynamic of CFL.
Let's wrap up a couple of ones just to end. What do you think your strengths were as a player? You talked about resiliency, but on the field, what were your strengths?
Yeah, my strength physically was my agility, quickness. To be, you know, 6'1", 205, and play nickel, to chase these little guys around, I had the ability to do that. And I think a lot of it was because I was able to return punts too. But just understanding football overall. Once I knew I had a high football IQ, just in terms of like how to do things. But once I marry that with the film study, it was like night and day. So I was literally ahead a lot of times, or I just knew what was going to happen. That's why I wish I played safety a little bit earlier, or
right,
that I never got released by Washington, because I felt like my second year in Washington as a safety, I really would have like leveled up a ton. So it was, I think for me, it was the mental part, because I knew what all 10 guys on my side were doing.
Right. Yeah, like a coach. Lambo leap, did you do it?
Are you kidding me? I did it twice in that game you talked about.
You did, yeah. You don't want to miss that opportunity.
Dude, I did one on both sides of the stadium.
Do they not let you back out? That's what some players have told me. You kind of get up there and then they want to keep you there sometimes.
Sometimes. I mean, there was, you'll see one where I jumped, I didn't quite make it, and they held me so I can like be on the wall. But then you got to know where, like if you run, I don't know if it's still there, but if you run towards like the middle, there's like a little hill.
Ah, okay.
But you can run and it's like, oh, there's like a little boost, like a step up for you.
That's the one for the lineman. That is the one for the, so the defensive lineman. You have to be tough to play in the NFL, and for as long as you did. But if you were going to make a business decision when you were playing, who did you not want to tackle?
Rob Gronkowski. I did not want to tackle that man. Yeah. He was 6'7", 260, and he had that big elbow brace. I didn't want to deal with that. You know, I had no issues tackling anybody, but you just knew like some were going to hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm not afraid to hit anyone. I have hit everyone. But you just know, you look at some, you're like, all right, this one's going to be pretty painful. So
you'll appreciate this as a lover of NFL history. I once wrote an article about Gronk, and I went back and checked. The two starting tackles for the Bears in Super Bowl 20 were shorter and lighter than Rob Gronkowski. That's how the NFL has changed.
Oh, that reminds me. The only person I wouldn't want to tackle is Brandon Jacobs, because he's the same size of our tackle.
Yeah. Who's the toughest receiver to cover? And that could be... that could be physically, or they just gave you mental fits. Who would be the one?
Yeah, I never, like I said, my mind wasn't strong. I never had mental fits, but guys like Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown, they just did not get tired, and they lined up all over the field, and they were all day long. They were all day. It was 60 minutes of just chasing these dudes around. It was never over. Even if they were covered, it was never over. So I think those two were really challenging.
I'm just smiling because I was thinking back to, you mentioned Barry Sanders at the very top of this recording, and there will be defenders who are going to be on Barry Sanders highlights clips for the rest of their life, as are you with Odell Beckham, because he has an incredible catch, right?
Down the left side. Well, that's my point. It's so funny because
it was good coverage.
It was great coverage. And I looked up and I was like, you know what? Eli, he threw it out of bounds. I'm like, okay, he overthrew it. Cool. And all of a sudden, Odell's still working for this catch, and he dives and he is stretched out completely, and he made this catch. And I was like, "You got to be kidding me!" I literally gave up. I was like, "This is going out of bounds."
Yeah.
Nope.
Wow. Do you miss it today, or do you enjoy what? I mean, you're still around it, of course, with the media side, but that's very different than being a player in the locker room.
It's totally different. Yeah. I will always miss it. I will forever. ever miss it, because that was truly the only thing I ever wanted to do outside of being, you know, a husband, a parent, playing professional football was the only thing I ever, like, there's the whole campaign, more than an athlete, you know, you can be more than an athlete. And I'm like, yeah, you can be, you don't just have to be an athlete. I was fine with just that, because that was, it's impossible. It's like I said, I thought it was impossible and I ended up doing it. So that was the only thing I wanted to do. I mean, I was running today and I had a vision. I was like, what if they'll take a 38-year-old defensive back?
That would be still there. Isn't it?
Dude, ever since Eric Weddle got signed last year, I'm like, let me stay healthy. You know, you never know.
I know it's still there for you. I know you can still feel like you could do it.
Oh, well, I'm still in shape.
Yeah.
That's the hard thing. I still have like my wits. I'm still pretty athletic. So that's the thing, you know? So I'm out.
Story.
I'm like 99.9% out. But if someone called me, then I would probably entertain it. But I would never go knock someone's door and beg for them.
If you were a headline making Buffalo Bills signing in January and playing in the Super Bowl, will you give me a one-on-one?
What kind of question is that?
I'm just double checking. I'm just buttoning everything down. I want to make sure.
Yeah, are you kidding me? You can sit next to my wife at the game. Are you kidding me?
Fantastic. I feel bad actually because one of your passions, I've asked you all about football, but you're very into your wine. And I
don't,
know you
don't feel bad about that. This is
no, but I want to know because some players don't really have something to go to next, and you've got the media and the wine stuff. Tell us what you love about that, and when you kind of got into that, and then I promise you, I'm done with your
time. So no, I tell you what, though, it is very valid because I got to understand and learn wine the same way I got to learn and love football. I love the history and the stories. You know, obviously, you may look at my Instagram and see me, you know, drinking wine and having this like fun lifestyle, but it's really about I love the history and the stories. And I decided to like study more and end up becoming a sommelier and starting a business. And this was huge because when you're the hardest thing for a professional athlete when they're finished is to reinvent themselves. That is like insanely impossible. That's why a lot of guys go the easy route. They just go coach or maybe they jump into media. Trust me, I love being in the media. I love doing this stuff. I love sharing my experiences, but I really dove into this thing and it is not a hobby. It is full on. I'm actually dealing with wine more than I am talking football. And it's such a fun passion. It's really cool. I knew I was doing the right thing because I was going through a time where the business was not doing well, but I was still having fun, you know?
You take it really seriously, but you're not a snob with it. Cause I can remember one day we were sitting in the studio at Sky and we were about to start recording. You were like, what wine do you like to drink? And I was like, I felt embarrassed. I was like, I just drink rosé because I like it when I'm on holiday in the south of France. And you said, well, that's what it's all about. It's about connecting with where you like it and what your memories are of it. Period. You're not a wine snob, right?
I mean, the best wine is the wine you like, period, you know? I mean, it's funny because as we're sitting here, I know they can't see, but I'm studying right now as we speak on my wine books right here.
I know. So. I thought you were going to show me a wine bottle.
No, they're over there.
Yeah, good man. All right. Well, this is fantastic. And then I'll see you in the studio in a couple of hours. Huh. Talk about resiliency. You got to put up with me again.
Let's do it.
Listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast brought to you by Elite Sports Travel. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Jackie Anklin, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietta. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. If you'd like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast and help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and review wherever you're listening. This has been a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.